The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
9 months, you're a monk. Work as hard as you can, and if it goes well, then you can enjoy, you can have as much social life as you want when the job is done.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetSetGo.ie.
Delighted to welcome now former Connacht prop, also played with Ulster once upon a time, Paddy McAllister, to the show. Paddy, good morning to you. How are you getting on?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, thanks. So, 1 week down in retirement, I think it is, at this stage. How's that been for you?
Yeah, it's been, I'd say the first half of the week was pretty good. It was just socialising with the boys, kind of last farewells. You know, I've said farewells at other clubs with the excitement of, you know, the prospect of another club joining. This was kind of weird where it was the final one. So it was weird. We had a lot of socialising, which was quite enjoyable. And then it was back to family mode, dad mode. And, you know, without the excuse of, can I get a lie-in or can I do this because I've got training the next day?
Is there a moment where you have to leave the team WhatsApp group? Does that happen yet?
Do you know what? I've left all the important ones.
Right.
I'm in Galway until end of the month, so I didn't quite want to leave that one, the players one, just yet.
Okay, you can hang around for a little bit longer. So, how easy a decision was it to actually hang up the boots this time?
Ultimately, it came down to, did I want to continue playing rugby with everything that's kind of gone on in my life the last 2 years? I've had a great career, which I've thoroughly enjoyed. I played for magnificent clubs. Rugby this last year and a half of the pandemic is something which I've never experienced. Life in general for so many has been something which has been crazy. And when it came down to it, I sat down with my wife and, you know, a few months back, and I said, you know, where would we be happiest as a family? And we haven't been up north, living up north beside family and grandparents in 8 years. And, you know, we've got 3 kids now. We haven't had that luxury of just dropping the kids off to the grandparents' house or anything like that. And we just said we'd be happier as a family, enjoying all of those things. And ultimately it came down to, yes, we would. So whenever family life was, we knew would be better up north, it was easy decision in the end.
Is it fair to say that maybe if there was no pandemic, you might have played a little bit longer? Did it bring certain things into focus a bit more?
Yeah, the pandemic was a big thing because the pandemic, I feel sorry for the younger kids who just started playing rugby, you know, mostly because they don't enjoy what rugby really is about, with the interaction with the fans, you know, going into town, having a beer after a good win at home or vice versa or away. You know, these Irish guys who are getting their first caps in empty stadiums where families can't be there. That's not what rugby is. And it's unfortunate that's the way it had to be, but that's kind of who I sympathize with more. This last year, there was a lot of stuff that happened with my family, with my wife included, which probably which made more of an impact in that decision rather than the pandemic, but the pandemic certainly was there.
Do you mind me asking, Paddy, what did happen?
Yes, so we were expecting our third child in October, and at 7 months pregnant, my wife randomly in late August just took a major stroke, and for about, you know, she got rushed to hospital. It was in the middle of pandemic, so it was really weird. I couldn't go with her to the hospital or anything. And for about 3 days, well, about an hour later, I got a phone call from the hospital saying, if you can't get here in 10 minutes, you know, we have to make decision A or decision B for you. And both don't look good. There was a 60% chance and a 40% chance of both my wife and the unborn child not making it. And so I had to scoot down the hospital. I think I probably made it in about 2 minutes rather than 10. And she had to travel down to Beaumont very quickly that night. And that weekend was pretty touch and go for both of them. So she's making a full recovery. There's a few things that still have to happen. But that was a massive blow to mine and an extended family and friends' life.
Were you at home when it happened, or were you out and about?
It was really crazy. I was just back from training. My eldest daughter was starting junior infants in a couple of weeks. So I took her to almost like an open day at her little school to meet the teacher and a couple of friends. And I came back home from that, and 10 minutes later, she walked in the house. She was outside with the kids, and she was there looking at me, but she couldn't, it was like looking at something empty and she couldn't say anything. And I thought this was pretty weird. And, you know, I asked a few more questions and she just said, I don't know. And whether that's rugby or life experience, we live beside, you know, an Irish legend in Gavin Duffy, who his wife, their family lives next door to us. And then in between us is another great family, the Murphys, who the wife is a nurse. So I just wanted another person's reaction to see what Deborah was like, just to confirm that I need to call an ambulance. So within 5 minutes, the girls came over and by their initial reaction, I just called the ambulance. So they were there within 10 minutes of me noticing. And I'm lucky that the stroke didn't happen 10 minutes earlier while I was at a primary school with my daughter.
It's incredibly quick thinking, incredibly quick reaction, Paddy. I mean, those couple of months then afterwards must have been incredible. Like, it's great to hear that your wife is doing well and is on the mend, and that you do have a third child now as well. That must just be this insane roller coaster over the following couple of months after that.
Yeah, it was really tough. You know, my wife, we had actually had a game against Munster in the Aviva that weekend, and it was my first kind of game to kick off the season. I think it was our last preseason game, and our wives within this rugby journey, you know, go through every emotion probably heightened for them than it is for us, because the next day if we get disappointments, we can go on the pitch and, or whether that be training or in a match, and, you know, physically tackle somebody and let that frustration out, where our wives don't get to do that. And she put in an unbelievable amount of work for the months prior to that game. And I remember going to her in hospital, and she really wanted me to play that game on the Sunday, and I just didn't know how I was going to do it. And I spoke to Andy Friend, the coach, and he left the decision up to me, even, you know, up until the morning of the game. And I managed to play like 65 minutes in that game. I don't know how. I broke down in the change room after, and, you know, I just did it for her, that sort of thing, because I understand the amount of effort that our wives put in compared to us. And the few months after that, you know, we had two kids who were older, and, you know, Deborah hadn't had her third baby yet. So it was tough. We had so much support from Connacht Rugby within itself, the players, staff. You know, every day, I don't think we cooked a meal for a month, because we just kept getting food, whether that's the neighbors or the club. So it was, and you understood it was going to be a tough situation, but it could have been a lot worse, whether probably at a different club or a different location than I was in.
We have so many conversations about the relationship between these awful life moments and what sport does to either put that into perspective. But in some ways, I guess it reaches a new level of importance at times like that. As you say there, the community spirit that you've witnessed firsthand from sport is something that would have positively helped you around that time. And I wonder, in that moment when you're playing that last pre-season match, where is your head at actually in the game? Of course, after the game, when you're sitting in the dressing room, it's a deeply emotional moment. But are there even fleeting moments in those 60 minutes that you play where you forget about it, or that you feel a certain weight off your shoulders for just a few moments?
I think sport is a wonderful thing where no matter what is going on in your life, when you're involved, and I guess I'm lucky at professional level, it's so high tempoed, and you've got to be switched on, or you will be made a fool out of, or injured, or stuff like that. And I was lucky that I probably had that release where I could go and just run around and just try and forget naturally, not intentionally, just naturally. You kind of forget anything that's going on in the world. I'd say that it did sneak into my mind a couple of times, but it's very quickly, you know, washed out whenever you've got John Ryan running at you or something like that. So you don't want to be thinking about your wife when someone like that's running at you. So during those 60 minutes, it was tough. But I was actually, looking back on it, relieved to have a release, because it was the hardest time of my life. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I mean, the first 24 hours, I was getting a phone call every half an hour from Beaumont. And, you know, when I answered that, it was either telling me she's here or she's not. And I was at home, you know, just on the couch, couldn't sleep, and having to prepare a speech to tell my other two kids that mommy's not here, or mommy's just gone away for a little bit. And I'll never forget it. It's still crystal clear in my memory today, you know, probably minute by minute. And it does put things in perspective. I don't think it makes rugby that much more important where I'm very, I understand I'm very lucky in my profession, but I think it did the complete opposite, where it gave me this life perspective where life is precious and family happiness, if it can be better somewhere else, then it's an easy decision as a husband, as a man.
Absolutely, Paddy. And how is your wife doing now?
She's doing great. She's really doing great. She's a little bit proud because the hospital are creating a case story of my wife, Deborah, because they've never seen it. That was the scary thing. They've never had a 36-week pregnant lady come in with a major stroke. They didn't know how to treat her. They didn't know what medication.
Wow.
And they were contacting people around the world, but they don't do trial and error. They don't do trial on medications for someone who's pregnant that far. So she'll be proud that she's got a bit of a case study on her now. And, you know, we've got a few heart operations to come up later on in the year. But all things considered, you know, we take that and run from the first week, no doubt.
Absolutely. And just speaking about life, you grew up in the Congo. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was fun. That's I'd say that's every little boy's dream world to grow up in. It all started with my grandparents, who after World War II from Belfast went to Congo in 1950. So that's where my father was born, and he grew up there, and the stories he has. And he met my mom in France. She's French. I'm very lucky. I've got that French side for especially occasions like this in the Euros, where they're probably the favorites every time. So I've got that that half blood in me, which always gives me a trophy at the end of these tournaments. And it was a fantastic life. I've, you know, from animals to experiences to friends we're still in contact with now. It's something I'll be really proud to take my kids back and show my wife kind of houses and where we grew up and things like that. And I definitely feel lucky and privileged to have had a childhood like that.
What sort of work were your parents and your grandparents doing out there?
So my grandparents started as missionaries, and my father and my mother went after Bible. They met in Bible college in France. They actually started doing agriculture. So my dad was a manager of a massive farm in the middle of Congo, and then that quickly went on to missionary work as well. And essentially for basically all my childhood, when there was a war or a breakout of something happening within Congo where people were running away from the situation, my father and his trusted team would go towards the situation and bring medical supplies and bring relief to the disability. And that's kind of, you know, the stories he has and my grandparents have were crazy. And it's something which, if you're not affected by it as a child looking in, you know, growing up and seeing these individuals in your life, you know, you'd be crazy, because it's definitely given me perspective. And I guess it's helped me make my decision this year, where family is the most important thing. And, you know, that's why I made it such an easy decision whenever we had that last conversation with my wife.
Are you acutely aware of the work your father is doing when you're living in the Congo? Like, are you aware of the inherent danger involved?
You know what? I didn't. I knew he helped people. But I remember being in refugee camps in the middle of Congo, you know, going around medical tents or where it be, you know, living stations, and seeing, I remember this one vivid memory of seeing this man. He must have been 18 or 19, and he had both legs amputated off because of an incident. And, you know, as a young kid, I was just looking, I thought that was really cool. And whoa, and, you know, and I asked him, could he still do a handstand? And he was showing me all of the tricks, and he was doing handstands, and he showed me this little tricycle cart that they'd made for him to get around the place. And he let me sit in his knee and jump around it. And looking back, you know, that kid has just went through, I don't know what a story was, but obviously something horrendous to have his legs amputated. And this little, you know, this little kid from with white kid running around, just asking him the most random questions, and maybe it brought relief to him or something different. But as a child, I just had so much fun. But as an adult looking back, there was definitely situations where I 100% didn't understand the gravity of where we were.
Like, it's a remarkable time in your life to be experiencing something like that, because so many people do go and try and experience that when they're grown up. And as you said, that sense of perspective is something people try and chase, whereas this was very much bestowed upon you almost as a child, where you have almost a beautiful lack of awareness around the context of all of this. This is your upbringing. This is normal for you, essentially, being in and around those situations.
Yeah, it was something which I didn't think anything different. It was just life. It was something where maybe my parents knew about, I have two older brothers and a younger sister, and I think our parents were probably always knew that later on in life we would understand, and it would shape us, you know, what real life is and what's happening in the real world. And as kids, they let us kind of just talk to whoever we wanted to talk to, play football in the most random places you'll ever see. And then let us develop as men and women as we enter adulthood. And, you know, I'm proud of my brothers and sisters. They've all gone into big things, but we still always have this kind of sense of perspectiveness on what we've seen as kids and how we enjoyed it. And, you know, almost how enjoyment can be brought into the darkest of scenarios in life.
Definitely. And speaking about getting involved in rugby, I had read that it was more your brothers that played rugby in Africa, and then you were more into football, and then you arrived in Armagh, and that's where it all began. Can you tell us how that came about?
Yeah, so my two older brothers played rugby in high school in Africa, and I was brought a football and just played around the side of the pitch, had no interest in any rules. And whether, I don't know if it was genetically or what, you know, my brothers and sisters, they probably won't like this, my two older brothers, but they're a bit smaller than me. And I think the last time they beat me up, I was probably about 12 years old. And I kind of got the luck, whether I was the quickest at the dinner table or the luck in the genetics, I don't know what it was, but whenever I got beaten up my whole life by those two guys, and then went to Armagh whenever I was 14, and there was no football team within the high school, the Royal School Armagh, and, you know, you had to play rugby. And after the first time, the physical aspect, I was naturally a bit bigger than the rest of my friends my age and absolutely loved it. And it was probably 2 years after that, when I was 16, Neil Duck, who was the academy manager in Ulster, came down to the school to speak to me and my parents about me going into the academy. And to be fair, my parents and I had no idea what the academy was. And he explained it to us. And he said, if you worked hard in this, it could be a profession. And I guess that was the wrong thing to say to me, because I said, all right, I'll just work at this and not really at my studies. And I regrettably did that. But at the same time, it's given me a massive career. And Neil Doak came down, you know, from Belfast to Armagh three times a week, and in lunchtimes, and trained me on the pitch while my friends were having lunch. And, you know, he just took one-on-one fitness sessions or gym sessions with me. And then after high school, just went straight into the academy and it went from there.
And you say that you regrettably done that, but looking back now, you must be happy enough that you went about it that way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I hope my parents aren't listening to this, because I started university as well, straight out of high school in Belfast in Jordanstown. And I think a month and a half later, with the rugby and the studies, I quit without counseling with them, and I kind of told them, yeah, I've quit university. And before I could explain, their obvious reaction as a parent, which I would have if my son said that to me. And I kind of just said, listen, school will always be there, university will always be there, but I just want to give this profession 110%, because it's not always going to be there. And they kind of agreed, I agreed that I would probably tell them and share my thoughts with them before taking action in previous decisions, but it's worked out really well. I mean, I've had, as any rugby player, you're going to have massive ups and downs, career-ending injuries, but I've overcome a lot of things. And, you know, I met my wife quite young as well, and the amount of memories we have with different clubs and countries and friends, it's been incredible.
What sort of career-ending injuries are we talking, Paddy? Because it does seem that, so many of these rugby players that come out of their career, the main thing they tell us is that they're happy to get out intact. Like, do you feel that your body's intact and have any injuries taken their toll down through the years?
I think those players firstly say that we're always going to have aches and pains after leaving rugby. You know, body intact means that we're not on a wheelchair or, you know, hobbling or have nerve pain. But I don't think anyone who retires kind of close to their 30s after a long career will say, when they use those words intact, it means that they're not, you know, they don't have anything hanging on or falling off.
Yeah.
But still pretty sore. In terms of the one I had, I was 22. So I started playing for Ulster quite young and was enjoying life. And it was the best time of my life. And, you know, I had something like close, just under 50 caps at 22. And I was in a team where you had superstars with Stephen Ferris and Ruan Pienaar, John Afoa, and, you know, we got to two league finals. We got to the Heineken Cup semi-final, and life couldn't be better. And then we were in preseason our last week in Bayonne, and I completely wrecked my knee in the last training session. I did my like ACL, LCL, hamstring, IT band. The whole thing was just gone. And that was a massive blow because I knew there and then, you know, it took...
We've just we'll re-establish that connection in just a moment with Paddy. That connection frozen, full flow, really interesting stuff. You're listening to Paddy McAllister, former Connacht prop, formerly played with Ulster as well, and just this incredible story, growing up in the Congo, moving to Armagh as a kid, played in that under-20s World Cup team, the same team as Peter Mahoney and Conor Murray, just for context, and obviously just this incredible career. I mean... switching up the Congo for Ulster rugby, Aisling, is just this incredible sea change.
Wow, it's just an amazing story, and just hearing him speak about how he was a child and what he saw, and he didn't realise at that moment what that actually meant or what that was about. You know, he was so innocent to it all, and now that he looks back and he realises actually what his father was doing the whole time. It is just amazing. What a story. He's brilliant now.
Delighted to say that Paddy McAllister is back with us. Paddy, you're there?
Hi, guys. All right. Sorry.
Loud and clear and looking crisp. You were full flow telling us where you were, I think, maybe in 2012 when, was it your left leg? All of it just shattered beneath you.
Yeah, basically. Just shattered completely.
Right.
Took a few operations, and then I was saying, I don't know if I got caught or cut off, but you know, my best friend in the team, Nevin, had passed away tragically with his brother and father. And, you know, as a young boy, even my whole life experience in Africa, it doesn't really prepare you until you experience something. And I had the support of my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife. And it was tough. It definitely helped me in the, you know, what I'm going through in the last year now with what happened to Deborah. But I think just coinciding with my leg and with Nevin, it was a tough year in my life. Yeah.
How close were you to Nevin Spence? I mean, this is obviously just this tragic story. I think it's coming up to 10 years next year of that awful tragedy. You said there he was your best friend. I presume it was through rugby circles that you two guys got to know each other.
Yeah, it was. He was in one school. I was in the other school. Two kind of country schools, and you know he was a farmer. And we always, you know, schools rugby within your province is such a small bubble where you kind of knew who the other opposition, who their star player was. And everyone in the country knew Nevin. And, you know, we all knew that his talents in football as well that could have taken him to the Premier League, but he chose rugby. And we had a lot of things together underage. And we lived with each other with a couple other guys in Belfast as soon as we left high school for 3 years. And you know, it's really weird looking back on it now. We kind of, our careers just coincided perfectly where promotion, first cap, contract, same contract, all of this stuff was really weird. And we became close friends. My friends back in Armagh and his friends back from his school in Wallace, and just kind of created a big group of friends. And his family, you know, Essie and Emma and Laura, his two sisters, you know, we're still... And with me and myself and my wife still in weekly contact with them, and you know we love them as family, and our relationship definitely gotten stronger off of a very sad situation.
It's amazing, I'd imagine, that bond that you build up with somebody when you're going through all these first time experiences together. Like you've outlined there, how important this was as a career for you, and here's someone else who's also managing to carve out a career in a game that you two guys love to play as kids.
Yeah, it's tragic. I mean, he was a young back, so his career was definitely taken off a lot better than mine was at that stage as a big slow forward. But he was definitely onto stardom within this country with rugby, or whether it be worldwide. You know, everyone can see he would run into a brick wall. You know, if you asked him to, if he's doing this interview and you said, oh, let's see if he can run into a wall, he's got that farmer smarts that he would just do it just to show you guys that he was hard. But he was a great guy. Most importantly, he was a good Christian man, and he comes from a good Christian family, and he definitely left a mark with a lot of people and anybody he met. And we spoke about the rugby community with happened to my wife. I mean, the worldwide rugby community that got together and sent over, you know, boxes and boxes and boxes. I'm telling you, you know, Nevin's room is filled with boxes of just support to his mother. And, you know, she just loves reading everything. And, you know, it was news everywhere, and that definitely comforted them.
So this is all in the space of essentially a few months in your life, is it, Paddy? The massive injury, and then obviously that tragedy on top of that. How do you react to all this happening? Because it's your career under threat, and obviously a terrible personal trauma that you've experienced as well.
Yeah, it was tough. I don't want to take the mood dark and gloomy, but for about 6 months it was tough. I had no release. You know, in professional sport, when you're on the injured list, you feel isolated as it is, and you know, you can do as much gym sessions and rehab as you can. It's very repetitive, and you know, all this extra stuff. And you know, Belfast is such a bubble where every corner, you know, you go, there's a memory or there's something, and it was just always haunting me in the back of my head. And rugby was definitely not in my forefront of my mind at that stage. And I remember it was my wife Deborah. 6 months after Nevin passed away, she, you know, the amount of support she gave me, she gave me the kick up the ass that I needed. Where I remember this, out of 7 days that week, I would just find people on Facebook and friends of friends, and I'll see they're out in town and go and have a beer with them. And you know, and it was 6 nights out of the 7 of that week that I did that and rock into training. And she said, you know, I'm done. And, you know, and the selfish sportsman, you know, that we are, I was like, you know, how can you say that? It's my knee and it's my friend. And she said she agreed everything. And she said, listen, I love you, and I'm here for you and have been, but I can't keep going on like this. You need to either get help or snap out of it. And thankfully, 6 months later, you know, after that conversation, it was done. That was it. And I'm thankful I listened to her, because, you know, we've got a beautiful family now. I don't know what road my life would have taken if I didn't listen to her. I definitely don't think I'd have come back from that injury in the first place. And then the next step was to talk to the trainers within the club and tell them what was going on. You know, in terms of, I felt like I couldn't sleep without even having a beer. I just bought my new place. I couldn't stay by myself and just be honest with them. And I got the help that I needed, and that was really it. So I'm thankful. I'm thankful definitely for Deborah that was there, that gave me the right kick.
That was going to be my next question. Was the support there for you, Paddy, with the rugby and the team? Did they offer that support?
It was there. I think it was the best that could have come from that generation. No, that's not me saying anything wrong.
It's sort of changed now.
It's massively changed. You know, when people talk about mental health, I was 100% depressed then. There was just nothing. There was no awareness about it. There was, you know, you had to make 100% of the move to almost get treatment or initiate the conversation. Which, as I just want to clear up, that there was nothing wrong or no fault of anyone bar myself. It's just the awareness of mental health and mental awareness now is just so out there, where it's a lot easier to get that help. And yeah, I definitely struggled. I mean, even this year, I struggled, and it took me, I just had different responsibilities now than I did then. You know, now was the case of I've got 3 kids and a wife to support before myself. And all of a sudden, after a few months, that came too much for me. And, you know, I had to see somebody, Aiden, who works at Connacht Rugby and with the RPI. You know, I had to see him for 2.5 months straight every week. And, you know, I'm not ashamed to say that mm-hmm. It's what I needed. And it's just to have the courage to, whenever, whoever individual is out there, whenever you definitely feel that's the time where you need to get some help. For me, it was, I could take as much mental strain as I could, but that mental strain started to have physical symptoms, lying in bed, you know, hot and cold flashes, tingling all down my body. And I knew it was coming from whether it's anxiety or too much stress. And that was the cutoff point. I wasn't going to do my family any favors if my head was away with it. So I found the help that I needed and I got it and I stuck with it and we made a plan. And, you know, I never say if you go through these things, you're never going to go through it again. It's just, I know now the next time something like this happens in my life, I'm a lot better equipped of how to deal with emotions than I would have been on the previous experience.
Mm. How open can you be in a modern rugby dressing room about that, Paddy? Has it moved to the point now where telling your teammates that you're seeing somebody isn't looked down upon in any way?
No, I really don't think so. Yeah. I think, you know, that same individual that you could see could be trained in so many facets within the field. It could be sports performance. It could be, you know, sports or life organizing. It could be mental health. A lot of guys see the same person for different things. I think it's all up to the individual who, myself, if I'm going to see Aiden, how far I delve into the reasons. But it's definitely, as I was saying earlier, you know, 10 years ago to now, the awareness of mental health issues has... embarrassment, and it should, and I hope it does for everybody, but it definitely has for me, and I think for the majority, where I think now the support we've had from players and coaches, it's definitely just, it's given them maybe a reason to help, and that's what I've seen from it. You know, if people see it within this sport that someone's struggling, I see more now it's go and help them any way I can, rather than maybe 10 years ago, you know, he'll be all right, which is no fault of anybody. That was just the culture back then.
It's really great to hear that it's changed, Paddy, and it's really great to hear your story. It is absolutely amazing. I guess the one of the final things just to touch on, Paddy, is what's next for you. Like, I mean, you've touched on it there, that maybe moving back to Ulster is what's your next step immediately. But for somebody who's had such an incredible life and has experienced so much, I presume you'll be itching to do something and to do something meaningful with your post-playing days.
Yeah, definitely. The thing that I'll be brutally honest again as well. I struggled. I kind of knew in the back of my head that I might be retiring this year, and I put a lot of work with Deirdre Lyons, who works with the RPI, who's fantastic, in working a CV and trying to, you know, make it as beautiful as possible, and went on so many Zoom calls, you know, got trigger happy probably a bit too much with flying my CV through applications, and it's just nothing came back. They just said, great. Great looking CV, but no experience in the real world. And I was bashing my head against the wall going, you know, it's this profession I've had, it's given me skills. But I understand I'm not in the real world, you know, didn't start the ladder of business world at 19, but what we've gained as professional sportsmen to go into an environment like that will either fast track somebody, the discipline we have, the competitiveness, the, you know, the speaking, the public speaking, the leadership qualities. Just no one took an opportunity for even an interview. And I'm lucky that through John Andreas actually helped me. He's an ex-player and has a sporting agency. We got in touch after I heard about his last year and difficulties in playing. And he got me set up with a couple men in Belfast through a WhatsApp group, and we had a Zoom call. And on the back of that, a job has come from just having a conversation.
Nice.
You know, and that's all I was screaming for, was someone just give me an opportunity to try and sell myself, because I know on paper he hasn't worked. He's 32. He hasn't done, you know, he hasn't been on a computer or done this, you know, for the last 14, 13 years. But luckily, these guys had an opportunity to speak to me. And on the back of one Zoom call, you know, I started a new job in August up north, and me and the kids and my wife are so excited because we haven't been back up north and, you know, in 8 years, and just to be with cousins and grandparents and brothers and sisters and friends that we haven't seen and been able, you know, their families have grown. It's just going to be a really exciting summer, and we're just really looking forward to it.
That's great to hear, Paddy. Congratulations on that. And thank you so much for being so honest with all the different things that have happened in your life this morning. It's been brilliant listening to you.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetZetGo.ie.